I got a late start writing the sermon on Friday because before I got myself situated in a cafe where I could look out at the rain and try to think deep homiletical thoughts, I succumbed to the temptation to respond to a couple of questions that floated my way through the ether of social media. Both questions. One was from a childhood friend who is a public school teacher in Stockton, and she has the good grace to be named Anne, with an E, just like my spouse. And the other question was from someone I met a few months ago at the Presbyterian Credo Conference in Louisiana. He's a Presbyterian minister from Pittsburgh who has good taste in beer and who at birth was blessed with the good fortune of having the name Ben. So both of these questions from Anne and Ben, you know, they're questions. Anne and Ben are both good people, and I like and respect Anne and Ben a lot. They're the kind of people who keep me participating in social media despite everything else. And both Anne and Ben were kind enough to ask my opinion about something that has transpired at Princeton Theological Seminary, where I spent 3 years trying to figure out how to be a clergyman many years ago. It turns out that each year, Princeton Theological Seminary awards something called the Kuiper Prize to someone who is doing good work in the articulation and practice of Reformed theology. And this year, the seminary awarded the Kuiper Prize to a man by the name of Tim Keller, who is the pastor of a very large church in New York City called the Church of the Redeemer. And that's a church that is affiliated not with the Presbyterian Church USA, but with the more conservative Presbyterian Church in America. And I don't know much about Tim Keller, but I know a little bit about his congregation, and I know a bit more about the Presbyterian Church in America. What I can say is that the Church of the Redeemer has been involved in planting churches and promoting ministry in urban centers around the country, which, depending upon how they're doing it, probably is a very good thing. And I can say that the Presbyterian Church in America split off from mainstream Presbyterianism back in the 1960s when mainstream Presbyterians began ordaining women and started articulating our support for civil rights and racial equality, which is to say that, generally speaking, I'm not a real big fan of the Presbyterian Church in America. So when the recipient of the Kuiper Award was announced, there were protests in Princeton. And apparently there was even a preach-in, which they didn't have preach-ins when I was there. And within a few days, the seminary rescinded its award. Keller will still be invited to come to Princeton to give his acceptance speech, but no one is giving him an award. And that raises all sorts of questions, thorny questions, that reside at the intersection of social justice and academic freedom and advocacy and simple hospitality. Personally, I think giving Keller the award reflects really poor judgment. I also think that the rescinding the award is an excellent example of what it looks like to bark up the wrong tree. The person who needs to be held accountable is not the person who accepted the award, but rather the person who decided to give that award in the first place. But that's just my opinion. What do I know? The whole thing reminded me of something that happened when I was at the seminary, when the seminary president at the time, who self-identified as an evangelical and who spent a lot of his time actively opposing the Presbyterian Church's move towards ordaining LGBTQ folk, he invited a man by the name of Peter Gomes, who was the chaplain at Harvard. He invited Peter Gomes to give the commencement address to the graduating class the year ahead of me. Soon after the invitation was extended, Peter Gomes was outed as a gay man. And the conservative students at Princeton howled with indignation, saying that the invitation to give a commencement address was an honor that the president should revoke, but the seminary president refused to disinvite Gomes, and Gomes delivered the address, which I looked up and read Friday afternoon, and it was quite good. One of the challenges of living a life of faith is that being faithful involves choosing what to believe. It involves making judgments about what is right and what is wrong. The author of the book of Ephesians talks about this challenge as being like choosing to live in the light as a child of the light rather than living in the darkness as a child of darkness. To be a child of light is to believe and to behave in ways consistent with what is right and good and beautiful and true. And that sounds really great, except that I'm aware that if you look at the two stories from the complicated place that is Princeton Theological Seminary, the two stories I shared with you, it's pretty evident that people can have radically different ideas about what it means to live in the light as directed by the book of Ephesians. In both stories, you had people on the one hand who wanted to revoke an honor in the name of morality, and on the other, those who appealed to academic freedom and the importance of hearing a variety of ideas as reasons not to revoke those same honors. In both cases, both sides would say they were living in the light. So who's correct? Who's living in the light? Well, naturally, I have my opinion. And I will move heaven and earth in an effort to ensure that every child of God is valued and celebrated and woven into the fabric of the church, because to me, that's what it looks like to live in the light. And I suspect it's likely that nearly everyone in this sanctuary more or less agrees with me on those issues. But most Christians would disagree with us. And do we have a right to claim that we are living in the light when we work for and pray for and agitate for that which an overwhelming majority of Christians around the world would disagree? Who are we to say that we know the light and that others only think they know the light but are actually living in darkness? And is it even possible to be a good human being and make claims of absolute truth? Aren't claims of absolute truth actually sort of the problem to begin with? Well, I have got to believe absolute truth claims are actually okay. Because it seems to me that when it comes to religious discussions, absolute truth claims are absolutely unavoidable. The Christian fundamentalist who believes a person can only know God through a literal reading of the King James Version of the Bible makes an absolute truth claim. But so does the atheist who says there is no God to know in those venerable words. Even the agnostic who says we cannot know for sure if God exists, and the universalist who says all paths lead to God, they are making absolute truth claims because their opinions absolutely exclude opinions held by the fundamentalist and the atheist. So when it comes to religion, we cannot help but have absolute opinions. What we can do is we can choose the opinions we have. And more importantly, we can choose how to express those opinions. We can be gracious and kind without betraying our sense of urgency around working for a world that is just and a church that weaves all of God's children into the fabric of God's kingdom. We can be righteous and respectful. We can be fierce in our convictions and gracious in our dealings with those who disagree with us. We can walk in the light without disdain for those who have yet to figure out how to shun the darkness. We can keep an open mind even after we have made up our mind. Now, I'm not going to say it's easy, because it's not. We live in a world that is increasingly divided. And from my perspective, some of that division feels necessary. It's necessary to be divided because some people are awful and hold awful opinions and are doing awful things. But just because some people are awful, that doesn't mean that I have to be awful. The challenge for me and for you as well is to live in the light without being sucked into the darkness, to oppose hostility without becoming hostile, to love when faced with hate, and to do all these things without capitulation to the darkness, because it can feel tempting to chase hate back into the darkness, but that only gets you stuck in the dark. So let us live as children of light, and let us live boldly, claiming the truths we have discerned through the good work of faithful living. And let us be as active as we are kind. Let us be as peaceable as we are passionate, until all things are made visible and God's light shines into the darkest corner of every heart until every sleeper is awake and everything is made new. That is where I was going to end my sermon. But I want to give a little coda, a little addendum, because I spent a lot of time over the weekend thinking about the award my alma mater gave and then took back from Tim Keller, the pastor of Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Manhattan. I read several opinion pieces on the subject, and I shared some emails back and forth on the subject with my friend Ben from Pittsburgh. And I think one of the reasons I am most troubled by the decision to give Tim Keller an award is not really the fact that he and I would disagree on some issues that are really important to me. I like and I admire a lot of people with whom I disagree, sometimes even on these same issues. The biggest problem I have, I guess, is in how Princeton Theological Seminary seems to be defining success. Tim Keller got his award because the folks at Princeton who decide such things determined him to be a successful pastor. And this determination came because he has built a huge congregation of something like 5,000 people, which actually is currently in the process of becoming four separate churches of, I guess, 1,250 each or something, all part of the same franchise. And this franchise is starting churches in urban settings all over the country. In fact, I have two friends, one from college and another from seminary, who are pastors of Redeemer franchise congregations, one in Jersey City and the other in New Orleans. And if you use numbers as your measure, there is no question. Redeemer is a successful church. It's a successful movement. It's a successful franchise. But I can't help thinking that in New York and in all of the other cities where Redeemer has planted congregations, there are churches and there are pastors who have been struggling to do ministry, shining a light in those places, in those cities, for years and years and years, usually without numerical success. And what do we say to those faithful souls? The pastor of a church that will not grow because the congregation includes someone who is mentally ill and drug addicted, and this person stands up and interrupts every sermon every week with obnoxious questions and random craziness. And for that reason, the church will not grow. But the pastor stays with the church, even at the cost of numerical growth, and refuses to make that person feel unwelcome because he is a child of God. Where is that person's award for excellence in ministry and for living out the Reformed tradition? Who is to say that she is not even more deserving than some guy who has merely figured out how to be popular? Now, I want very much for Montclair Presbyterian Church to be full every Sunday. I want very much for us to be a solid and healthy institution. I'd even kind of like it if someone wanted to replicate our success somewhere else. That would be really cool. But when it comes to measuring real success, when it comes time to evaluate the brightness of the light we have attempted to shine in the darkness, may it be said of us that we were a place where every child of God found a spiritual home, where no one was turned from the light and sent back into the darkness for any reason. May this be a church where, to borrow words from the old patriotic hymn, may this be a church where every success is nobleness and every gain divine. May that be the light we shine in the darkness. Amen.